For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Bradley Fuller. The expressive capabilities of a lone guitar are not lost on Jason Vio. In 2015, the guitarist's performance for the Azika Records album Play won him that year's Grammy for Best Classical Instrumental Solo. But it's not all solo performance for Jason. He finds rich rewards in the collaborative atmosphere of chamber music as well. Recently, I had the chance to speak with Jason about chamber works featuring guitar, as well as an upcoming Palmetto State performance that has him joining forces with the Escher String Quartet. Here's the conversation we had. Well, Jason, it's great to have you today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You're performing this Thursday as part of Clemson University's UTC Chamber Music Series. What all is in store for this program?
Well, Bradley, the Escher String Quartet and I have had a collaboration for about 10 years now, and we've done this program, or something similar to it, many places around the country. And so what we're going to do at the Brooks Center for the Arts, the program is going to have basically the quartet, the string quartet, Escher String Quartet plays the first half. So they're going to do a Brahms quartet, Opus 67, and a Shostakovich quartet. And then there'll be an intermission. And then I'm going to play a set of three solo guitar pieces, something from Argentina called Misionera by Fernanda Bustamante. Then I'm going to play original guitar work, one of the most beloved pieces for solo guitar by Spanish composer Francisco Tárrega, called Capricho Árabe. And then one of my arrangements of a Duke Ellington standard in jazz called In a Sentimental Mood. And all three of these are from my most recent solo CD from 2015 called Play.
And that's the one you won a Grammy for that year.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, it was won the 2015 Grammy for Best Classical Solo Performance. So for basically for like unaccompanied instruments or solo instruments in the classical division. And then after that, the guys and I get together and play a very popular work with classical music audiences, the Boccherini Fourth Quintet in D major that has the famous Fandango movement at the end. And I'll be bringing a set of castanets with me for Brooke, who's the cellist in the quartet, to play. This was actually something written into the part by Boccherini, kind of like a solo space. He doesn't necessarily specify any rhythms or notes. He just says castanets belong here for like a 16-bar solo that the cellist plays.
Well, that's fascinating. I mean, I've read about Boccherini before and some of his insistence on doing things a certain way. I think it even cost him his job at one point. But that's interesting about the castanet. So it's almost a sextet, maybe?
You know what? I'd never even heard anybody think about it that way before. That's really cool. Yeah, it is sort of like a sextet, right? Because a lot of times, you know, even and we've done this before too at a couple festivals where we found somebody that was there in the town or that worked for the organization that actually played castanets. And when we have something like that, that's always really nice. That's really fun because then it kind of adds something, a visual element. They sort of walk out on stage during this 16-bar solo and then they walk off or they dance or whatever. So, yeah, it's Boccherini was really ahead of his time in a lot of ways. I mean, this is kind of a fusion of Spanish music and this kind of Rococo period of classical music. The piece must have sounded very exotic, actually, I think, to audiences at the time. So I think he was very, very forward-thinking in something like this.
So was he one of the composers who helped bring the guitar kind of into the realm of quote-unquote classical music?
Yeah, I would say so, because that period is that period that we think of as the Rococo era. Corelli was a big composer as well in Italy around that time. It's kind of a bridge transition period between the Baroque era and the classical era. And so the fact that Boccherini wrote six of these quintets for guitar and string quartet certainly, you know, helped the guitar's cause down the road. The 19th century, the guitar had many well-known guitarists in their respective bases, like Mauro Giuliani in Vienna, who knew Beethoven and was actually a very popular performing musician in Vienna, and also Fernando Sor in Paris. So those things helped as well. And then into the late 19th century, the Spanish style kind of comes into its own. And then, of course, it brings you into the 20th century, where probably the guitar has had its most wide-ranging period to date. And I think in the 21st century, we're seeing that that's only going to grow.
I was going to say, guitar is such a versatile instrument and found the world over with such a range of works written for it. As even your program this Thursday attests, do you ever feel overwhelmed by the sheer size of your instrument's repertoire?
Oh, no, not at all. Actually, I would say it's still at this point a little underwhelming.
Okay.
I wish there were more pieces actually in the chamber music repertoire. There's plenty of concertos and this sort of thing, but we could use some more. Not a lot of people know that there's well over 300 concertos, published concertos written for the instrument. Chamber music is where it's kind of a little bit thin because guitar lost some ground in the 19th century because Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, Schubert, and then on to like Chopin, Schumann, all the Romantic era kind of thing. Those guys didn't write anything for the guitar, even though Schubert and Chopin expressed an affinity for the instrument. They loved the instrument, but either there just wasn't enough of a player-performer base to write for, such as violin or piano, right? So we're sort of lacking that standard repertoire that the string world and the piano has. So actually, I would say it's a little underwhelming. But we, you know, I as a sometimes curator at these chamber music series and chamber music festivals around the world, I try to put a program together that introduces not just the audience, but also oftentimes the presenters first go around with guitar as well. So that can help. Hopefully, that can help change attitudes and get people excited. It's been really going well so far.
What's it like collaborating with a string quartet? I mean, I assume there's a different set of considerations for you as the guitarist as opposed to those strings players who are bowing their instruments, the violinist, violist, cellist. How does your preparation look different, and how do you work with this very established traditional group of four strings players and get them to branch out into the guitar quintet?
From my perspective, it's a little bit like, the guitar is essentially a percussion instrument. It belongs to the percussion family the same way that the harp and the piano do. So there's a string that's either hammered or plucked, and the sound decays right away, right? So whereas string players can sustain with the bow. So those two different sounds coming together create an interesting blend. So it's probably not unlike, you know, when a string quartet plays with the piano, and of course there's tons of repertoire from the 19th century for that combination. But the difference being that whereas the piano can sometimes overpower the string quartet, sometimes the string quartet, if not careful, can overpower the guitar. So for them, the challenge is becoming sensitive to the guitar and what its actual dynamic range is. And then I kind of push the sound a little bit more in the upper kind of, you know, forte or louder ranges. For the Boccherini, we've never needed an amplification. You know, like I'll carry a small amplifier and a microphone with me on some of these things if we're playing something by Aaron J. Kernis or, say, the Castel Nuovo Tedesco Quintet. But in the case of the Boccherini, the texture is light enough that the players can still play with their sound, and the guitar doesn't really get covered too much. So we tend to play this piece, particular piece in these concerts with nothing, really, just unamplified. But, I mean, we've been playing together for so long that we just sort of fall right into it when we see each other again. And also, we're all friends, and we love hanging out together and that kind of thing. So it makes it really fun. I always look forward to seeing those guys.
I've always thought with chamber music, there's a certain interpersonal element beyond just being able to collaborate musically that has to be there for it to really be pulled off.
Correct, yeah. That's why I enjoy chamber music so much. And even doing, you know, chamber music festivals in the summertime where you're meeting new people and you rehearse for a day and then you play the next day for the audience. I mean, that's a very exciting thing for the audience. And those audiences come for that experience because they know that a lot of these musicians are meeting for the first time. And getting together, working hard, and then performing the piece the next day. There's an excitement and a freshness that comes from that that the audiences of those particular venues find very exciting. But for the performers, it's very social type of thing as well, which is, you know, very different feeling from, you know, sitting in your hotel room and preparing a solo piece and crafting it, you know, to a diamond-like consistency. You know, you can't really do that with chamber music, and that's what, you know, I teach with my students at Cleveland Institute of Music and also Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, is that this is a very different animal from playing solo music. You know, you have to have your antenna out and play reactively to those around you. It's a much different type of thing.
So with this emphasis on chamber music, do you have any projects in the work? I know your album Play was obviously a solo recording for which you won the Grammy.
That's right.
But are you working on another recording with the Escher Quartet or any other?
Yeah, we have actually, we have our record in the can already. It's actually in the final stages of its post-production. I don't have a firm release date on it right now from the record label, Azika Records, which is the label I've recorded for almost 20 years now. I'm very excited about that. We've all listened through to a couple different edits of the recording, and yeah, it's pretty much ready to go. And that will have this particular Boccherini quintet on it, and also a wonderful quintet by Castel Nuovo Tedesco, and also one by American composer Aaron J. Kernis. And that piece is called 100 Greatest Dance Hits, and it's influenced by disco, hip-hop. It was written in the early 90s and kind of chronicles Aaron J. Kernis's experiences riding the subway train, you know, to and from work.
Wow. So is it a medley of sorts? Or?
It's not a medley. They're all original tunes by Kernis written in a style that is not meant to copy the styles of disco, but meant to sort of evoke the feeling of it.
Well, I'll be looking and listening out for that release. You're also a big-time educator. I mean, you helped co-found the guitar department at the Curtis Institute and also have taught at the Cleveland Institute of Music now for over 20 years. I imagine
Correct.
Those roles probably give you a lot of perspective as an educator. So what's the future of classical guitar looking like?
Well, it's looking pretty bright because the young players at the highest level are playing really, really well technically on the instrument. They're just playing really amazing. And there's tons of competitions around the world that offer them, you know, chances to compete. Well, what we do need a little bit on the other end is a little bit more chamber music education for them. So when we send them out into the world, they're able to function and take gigs and become good sight readers and this sort of thing. Most of the time, that's really what we see, is that they're not really prepared to sight read something or learn things on the fly. And in today's world, that's a pretty important skill for a guitarist to have. But I definitely think our future is bright. There's so much talent out there. And the core of talented classical guitarists and the education level is much higher. And the core of players is much wider. So in that sense, I mean, really, like, you know, sky's the limit at this point.
And finally, you've been described as among the elite of today's classical guitarists, as well as the most precise and soulful classical guitarist of your generation. Usually when I hear precise or soulful, it's because of an absence of the other one, so I think that's pretty unique. And on top of that, you won a Grammy, as we mentioned. So given all this, what advice would you have for an aspiring guitarist, an upcoming musician who wants to accomplish similar things?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, just being open to as many musical experiences as one thinks they can handle. I mean, it's a lot of it is sort of having a sense of time management and just kind of knowing one's limitations as well, and that it's not a race, it's a marathon.
Well, Jason, thanks so much for the perspective, and also all the best at this upcoming concert at Clemson, and also for your upcoming release.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks, Bradley.
Part of a conversation I had with guitarist Jason Vio. Jason, who co-founded the guitar department at the Curtis Institute of Music and who also teaches at the Cleveland Institute of Music, joins the Escher String Quartet for a concert on Thursday, October 11th at Clemson University's Brooks Center for the Performing Arts. More on the concert, part of the university's UTC Chamber Music Series, can be found at clemson.edu/brooks. For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Bradley Fuller.